Now, back to Brainstorming with Billy.
The Living Brain.
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Welcome back. This is Bill Frank, and you're listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain here on KKZZ, Positive Talk Radio for Ventura and Santa Barbara Counties. Every show has a theme, and today's theme is stretching our thinking. Each of my guests is talking about some different way of thinking about a subject that we thought we knew and we understood. My first guest is a white-collar criminologist. We discussed his control theory from his book, The Best Way to Rob a Bank is to Own One. My second guest is a fellow at DEMOS, which is a nonpartisan public policy research and advocacy organization based in New York City. He coined the term invisible capital. We discussed his theory from his book of the same name, Invisible Capital. My next guests are former McKinsey consultants who happen to be brothers. They've examined a better approach to breakthrough ideas that doesn't involve brainstorming and thinking outside of the box, because those outdated approaches just don't work. We'll retrain our brains to generate better ideas with the help of their latest book, Brain Steering. As always, if you want to join in the conversation, you can call us at 639-0008. Kevin Coyne is a senior teaching professor at, I don't even know how to pronounce this. It's the business school at Emory University, and he's a former senior partner at McKinsey & Company, where he led the firm's worldwide strategy practice. Brother Sean Coyne is the management consultant with 25 years of experience in marketing, strategy, and organizational leadership at Procter & Gamble and McKinsey & Company, and other leading firms as well. Together, the Coyne brothers are the managing directors of Coyne Partnership, a boutique consulting firm serving senior executives and boards of directors in both private and public sectors. Their articles have appeared in numerous publications, too many to go into here, and of course, they've appeared on CNBC, NPR, and all of the usual business outlets as well. They both live in Atlanta, and joining us from Atlanta, Sean and Kevin. Welcome, guys. How are you today?
We're good, Bill. How are you?
Well, I'm doing fine, and it's a pleasure to have the both of you. This is a double treat. So let's dive right into it, because I think your book is very timely. There's never been a time, at least in most people's working career, where new ideas and creative thinking has been more important. And while you unequivocally say that anybody can be creative, most people aren't, because traditional methods of creating new ideas have really been proven to be very ineffective. The conventional wisdom tells us that brainstorming and thinking outside of the box produces new ideas. Now, studies that you cite in your book show that that's wrong, however. So talk to me. You're coming on Brainstorming with Billy the Brain, and you're saying that brainstorming doesn't work. So you've got your nerve. State your case. Why is brainstorming a waste of time, and what business leaders would be better off giving their team members their objectives and letting them go off and be on their own? Talk to us why brain steering is a better alternative.
Sounds good. Well, first thing on brainstorming, there actually have been a bunch of studies that have been done that have said if you take the same number of people you put in a traditional brainstorming session, and instead of having them work together for X number of hours, you take them and send them to separate offices for that same number of hours, they will, on average, produce more ideas and better ideas. Now, that's counterintuitive, because you say, well, wait a minute, surely there's some value of people sharing, and we think there is too. The problem with brainstorming is it violates so many of the norms for how people work productively together that it actually subtracts value. So let's just start with, you put 20 people in a room. Well, what's going to happen when you put 20 people in a room? 17 of them aren't going to talk because they don't want to talk in front of their boss's boss, or they don't want to take up other people's airtime, or they're being cynical. Take that same group of people and break them up into five groups of four, and you have five conversations going at once, and the social norm when you're in a group of four is for everyone to talk. You'd look weird if you didn't talk. So just that alone makes a big difference.
Okay.
Secondly, brainstorming when you're in a session, the ideas bounce all over the place. Let's sell it in Germany. Let's paint it blue. Let's make it bigger. Let's make an upscale version. And you never build on the idea very much before somebody shouts out something that's a non sequitur. So how about if you took one of those little groups and you said, I'm going to make you spend 20 to 30 minutes on a single question. Then what would happen is the first 5 minutes would sound like a typical brainstorming session in that little group of four. But then people would start coming back to the better ideas they heard in the first 5 minutes, and they'd make them better. They'd say, well, it doesn't work everywhere, but it might work over here. Or it doesn't work exactly like that, but if we made this change, it would work. And in the next 10 to 15 minutes, they would go from just a shotgun blast of shallow ideas to a few really good ones. But if you think about it, if I had 4 hours of people sitting in a room, 20 people sitting in a room, or I had 4 hours where each of five groups took a half an hour with each of eight questions, you know, I've got eight questions times five groups. I've got 40 different questions. I'm able to have even more variety than if I had everybody together and the sky's the limit. So
all
I
right.
can go on. But basically, there's so many ways that brainstorming works against how people in groups build off of each other. What brain steering does, it replaces that with methods that work with how people work together, and then it expands it into how an individual can be individually better and how a whole factory of people can be better.
All right. Well, break it down for us then. We're talking to Kevin and Sean Coyne, everybody. We're talking about their book, Brain Steering, A Better Approach for Breakthrough Ideas. What is the difference then between brain steering and brainstorming?
Well, so brain steering then is much more focused and much more able to leverage the participants' thinking. One of the key aspects that Kevin referred to was having people talk about a single question for a focused length of time rather than just bouncing off the walls. If you can get people to focus on a right question, that will really help focus their thinking. And what we mean by a right question, it's something that focuses your thinking very tightly and forces you to look at your problem from an uncommon perspective. So, for example, instead of just asking, you know, a generic question like, well, how can we increase profits? Okay, that's way too vague and it's way too common a question. You need to ask yourself a much more focused question like, you know, what's the biggest hassle our customers have to put up with? And how could I profit by eliminating that hassle?
All right, and let me stop you right there, okay. Because, Sean, that is a great example. And, in fact, you described the United States Post Office as an example of this. So let's use the USPS, define what the problem was and how they looked at it from a different angle. And then I'm going to challenge you because I'm going to say probably the USPS was looking at the wrong problem. But go ahead and state the case first.
Okay, sure, yeah. In the case of the United States Post Office, what they discovered was their customer's biggest hassle was, number one, I'm always concerned about whether I have the right amount of postage or not. And number two, I'm doubly concerned because I buy stamps rarely enough that it might have gone up since the last time I bought stamps. And so I'm either having to go back to the post office to buy those little 1 and 2 cent stamps, or I'm having to worry, you know, should I gamble and send this letter out? But if it comes back for not enough postage, I'm really screwed. So that's what led them to create the new Forever stamp, which went, once you buy it at whatever the cost is today, they promise to deliver the mail with that Forever stamp anytime in the future, no matter what the rates are at that time.
Right. And in all fairness to the United States Post Office, that really solved a multi-billion dollar problem. So it was a good solution, and it attacked a major concern that consumers had. But and what they did was they looked at airlines and other people who buy futures in oil and hedge against future inflation, and they just applied hedging principles to stamps, and they came up with a Forever stamp, which I think is a brilliant idea. Mm-hmm. However, you know, even though it is a billion-dollar industry, isn't that missing the real point here? I mean, the USPS is faced with a much bigger problem of declining numbers of pieces of mail. Their relevance in the world is declining. They're looking at eliminating Saturday service. I mean, bigger issues there than just focusing on Forever stamps, aren't there, guys?
No, you're absolutely right. There's in all of these situations, there are many hassles that a customer faces. And so you might end up saying, well, what is the biggest hassle I can actually do something about? And so we're not saying that one single question can replace your entire strategic planning thought process. If we were running the post office, we would ask a whole bunch of questions about sort of what's the biggest hassle, who's using my services in ways I never expected or intended, and how could I build off of that? What are the rules that I have been living by that actually aren't rules, they've just been conventions, and I can rethink those. In other words, it would take a whole series of questions to be able to diagnose everything and come up with a substantially better plan for the entirety of the post office. We simply like to use that as an example of where a single question can produce a very valuable insight.
Yeah, and it is good. Thank you, Kevin, for clarifying that. So the first step is ask the right questions, and then what's the second step of the brain steering process?
Well, the second step is to use the right process. Once you've got your mind focused with the right questions, using the right process can make all the difference in the world. In the case of a group setting, you heard the explanation that Kevin gave earlier about how you can replace a traditional brainstorming session with a brain steering session that operates under a very different process. You can even do things when you're working by yourself. For example, One of the things that a lot of people do is they make the mistake of thinking that they can ideate equally well at almost any point in time, when in fact, if you examine how you work as a person, there's definitely certain times when you're able to concentrate much more effectively and other times when you're not. And so recognizing what your own personal style is, or if you're doing it with one other person in a small group setting, recognizing what your complementary styles are and adjusting the time that you spend and how often you get together to do it or even what time of day you do it at are all ways of changing your process to do whatever's going to be most effective for you.
Another example that an individual can do is you can always, every time you find a great idea in the world, and you say, I sort of wish I had thought of that, ask yourself, what was the question that if I had been in their shoes at that time would have led me to find that idea? And store that question away, because the next time you have a problem-solving challenge, what our work has shown is that if you don't do something like that, you're going to go down the same mental path as you've gone down a dozen times before. It's why we're all lousy at buying presents for our loved ones. We actually did a survey, and 84% of all the presents bought for loved ones on Valentine's Day were failures, because the person getting it either couldn't remember it 7 months later, or they were disappointed by the gift. Why? Because you love this person, you've gone down the same mental path dozens of times before. Every birthday, every Christmas, every Mother's Day, every Valentine's Day, people go down the same path. But if you have compiled a list of every time you saw somebody give a great present, don't record the present, record the question that said, what would I have had to ask for me to have seen that idea? Then when you come down to looking for a present for a loved one, you have a different approach. You have a new set of questions to focus your mind.
All right, but that begs the, Kevin, that begs the bigger issue. How does one borrow the right questions? How do you know, you look at a present, how do you know what questions to ask that are going to lead you to that? Give us some examples if you can.
Well, sometimes you know the exact question that somebody already asked themselves. Other times you could put yourself in their shoes and say, based on what that gift is, here are the questions they might have asked themselves. For example, I have a friend who gave an amazing necklace to his wife 1 year, and it turned out that the question behind that necklace was the two of them shared a particular secret, and so he asked himself, well, what is a secret that only the two of us share, and what kind of gift could I give her to serve as a reminder of that? And what the necklace was a series of glass beads that when you looked at them just looked like a pretty necklace. But unbeknownst to the rest of the world, if you actually looked at what the beads did, they actually spelled out a certain phrase that the two of them shared secretly in Morse code.
Very
Another
clever.
Another example would be to say, you know, what's the single most romantic moment that I have ever shared with my loved one, and how could I help them relive that experience, wherever we were at the time or whatever we were doing at the time? What sort of gift could I give them that would help them relive that experience?
Right.
Another great one when it comes to gifts is to say, what is the perfect birthday gift or Valentine's Day gift that only they could give to me? And what does that tell me about our relationship so that I can now know what I could give, that I could be the only person to give to them?
All right. We're talking to Kevin and Sean Coyne, everybody. Their book, Brain Steering, A Better Approach to Breakthrough Ideas. And I like in your book that you've got a new system of ideation, which I love that word, too, that you call the MISI system. So what is the MISI system and how does it work?
MISI stands for Mutually Exclusive and Collectively Exhaustive. And it's not as hard as the mathematical phrase makes it sound. This is when you've got to be really thorough in your search for an idea. So you're moving beyond random questions, and what you're doing is you're saying, how is it that I make sure I have asked every important question? And what you're after is you're after, again, a list of questions that's mutually exclusive, means the questions don't overlap with each other, but they're collectively exhaustive, meaning they cover the entire waterfront. So by way of analogy, if you think about a checkerboard, all the squares in total cover the whole board, but none of them overlap. That's mm-hmm. the analogy.
Okay.
So the way you get there is by a logic tree. You start off with a fairly high-level question, like, what do I get my loved one? And then you break that question down into 2 to 4 sub-questions that cover the waterfront. Then you break each of those down into no fewer than 2, no more than 4 questions, and you create a tree. And by doing that, you're able to make sure you cover the entire waterfront of possibilities. Now, I may have just made a mistake. I'm not sure I'd do that when I'm looking for a present for my loved one, because I'm not sure I want to cover all the possibilities of buying her a present. I don't want to cover vacuum cleaners, mouse traps, and detergent. But in other kinds of problems where you're saying, for example, how do I break into a new market segment, you might very well want to break it down that systematically. It's just another approach. The book contains a number of approaches as to how do you use both pure creativity and then also how do you use analytics to supplement your creativity to make sure that you are being as powerful as you can be.
All right. Well, Sean, break it down for me. Can analytics actually lead to original new ideas?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. A lot of people think that analytics and creativity are opposed to each other, but they really reinforce each other. Here's one example for you using the technique that Kevin just described of a logic tree. Imagine that you are a reporter at a gossip magazine.
Okay.
Okay? And you've written gossip articles for the last 10 years. You've got a gazillion different ideas that you've used, and you're on the lookout for a fresh way to approach next week's gossip articles. So let's say that you want to cover a fashion trend. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
You can break that down. You can say, well, let's see, a fashion trend, is it worth covering? I know. I'll break it down into two sub-questions. Is it a new trend, or is it something that's now dead? And then I say, okay, I can break down, is it a new trend? Is it a new trend in something great, or is it a new trend in something really awful? Okay, or if it is, and then if I break it down further, if it is a new trend and it's something great, you say, well, let's see, did we create it or did we spot it first? You know, if we're the ones who spotted it first, we say, did we spot it because there was one really cool person who was doing it, or are we seeing a pattern here? If it is, you know, one really cool person we saw, you break that down further.
All right.
What exactly is that innovation, and who is that person?
And we're going to have to leave it there, Sean. I get the idea. Thank you so much. We've been talking to Sean and Kevin Coyne. Their book, Brain Steering, A Better Approach to Breakthrough Ideas. Guys, where can they find out more about your book on the Internet?
Folks can go to either brainsteering.com on the Internet, or they can go to Facebook and just type in the phrase brain steering and the page will pop up for them.
Thanks so much, and thank you both for being our special guest here on Brainstorming with Billy Brain. We'll talk to you tomorrow.